This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net.
Hi, everyone. It's Tuesday, March 11th, and welcome to Wells Tech, episode 332. My name is Sally Draper, and I'm coming to you from lovely New Ulm, Minnesota. And I think out of 331 previous episodes, I've never let off the show this way. There's a reason for that. My fearless leader, Wells Technology Chief Technology Officer Martin Spriggs, is actually out of town today and not able to join us on the live episode. So you've got me running the show here, and I'd appreciate a little prayer if anyone out there is watching live, because it's a little nerve-wracking to be in charge of all of the major controls that go on behind the scenes to make Wells Tech happen for you. But I hopefully have it all under control, and have a great show and a wonderful discussion topic to share with you today. Martin and I did a little pre-recording, and I think I'm going to just go ahead and dive right into our discussion topic for the day. So give me just a moment to cue up that video, and we'll have Martin join us via the magic of technology. So to kick off our discussion topic today, Martin, we had an interesting email from Pastor Rob Gunther. He's up in Kenai, Alaska, and he wrote to us about a new app that's getting a lot of positive vibe out on the web this week. It's called Spritz, and I have the website open here. Got to show a quick demo of this. It is a speed reading app. And if you go to their website, spritz.com, you can actually click on the little emulator they have on the screen, and it'll show you the concept that it plays one word at a time, and you don't have to move your eyes at all to track the reading. And so because of that, this is this demo that I'm showing on the screen right now is at 250 words per minute, but the concept is you can bump it up to 400 words per minute or maybe 600 words per minute, and you can actually comprehend reading at mega speeds. Apparently, your normal reading speed is probably about 220 words a minute, and with this type of app, you might be able to bump it up quite a bit. So I thought that was interesting timing for Pastor Gunther to share that, since this week we're finishing up our discussion of the shallows, what the internet is doing to our brain, and the concept that this bombardment of information at massive speeds now may be causing us to lose some comprehension skills and some deep thinking skills.
So I was going to say, is there a lot of deep thinking involved with an app like that? Because you're really just trying. I've always been kind of a slow reader.
Me too.
And no matter what I've tried, and I've tried different techniques or whatever, and you know, I guess I'm okay with that. I just allow a little bit more time, and you know, this book has taken me a while to get through. Not necessarily because the speed at which I have to read that I read, but the speed at which I have to read this, because it is pretty deep, and especially these last two chapters, where I don't know if I'd say he brings it all together, but he certainly drives home his point that bad things are happening.
Oh my goodness! Did you say that? I thought you were kind of against that point, but well,
I'm just saying what he said.
Okay, that is kind of what I got from it. There wasn't really a happy ending to wrap things up here, but it was more reiterating the point that the changes that are going on because of this information overload and the snippets of things that we're constantly feeding to our brains are rewiring us, and that has a potential negative effect. And he even takes it as far as it's going to have this massive cultural negative effect. So, yeah, I got a little bit more down that path in these chapters 9 and 10 as we wrapped up the book.
This will be a little bit interesting to all those folks who went through catechism class, because this first chapter, chapter 9, I think it is, he really talks about the place of memorization and the loss of that fact because of the the way things have trended, even starting with the written word and then getting into the internet and so on and so forth and TV and such, that a lot of people are downplaying the importance of memorization. And one of the points he makes is that has detrimented your ability to capture and remember things long-term. Those memorization skills have been marginalized by a lot of people now, and that's had some effect on how we deep think.
Right. One of the quotes I picked up was, learning how to think really means learning how to exercise some control over how and what you think. Mm-hmm. And so not just taking the passenger seat and letting things whiz by you, but actually contemplation and, cognitive skills that are developed in that process of actually deep thinking. So,
right. There's a number of good quotes here. Says the popularity of commonplace books ebbed as the pace of life quickened in the 19th century, and by the middle of the 20th century, memorization itself had begun to fall from favor. Progressive educators banished the practice from classrooms, diminishing it as a vestige of a less enlightened time. And I guess for one, I believe our pastors and teachers still value the importance of memorization. I see still kids memorizing their catechisms, memorizing hymn verses, those kinds of things. I think there's a good and a bad side to that. Just memorization for its sake is not beneficial, but used effectively and used appropriately, it's a valuable tool and does stretch that brain.
That's just an interesting concept. I didn't grow up with that tradition at all. And so, you drawing those conclusions really does make a lot of sense, and something that I didn't pick up from that chapter. But I see it in my kids. I'm in awe of the fact that they can memorize and, not just the catechism, but certainly the skills were learned as they worked through their catechism class and their hymnology studies. But, even my husband memorizing sermons for the pulpit and things like that, it's just amazing to me, those skills, and something that I just lack. So yeah. That's very true.
A neat section. So I don't disagree with everything he says in the book. I think he does make some good points, especially in this chapter. He says, and he's talking about kind of the trend toward using the internet as kind of the outsourced, your brain. We don't need to remember all this stuff because you've got the internet there and you can always go there and check it out. So you've kind of equated the internet to our brains. It's a brain. But one of the quotes he says is the notion that memory can be outsourced, as Brooks puts it, he's quoting an author who did a study, would have been unthinkable at any earlier moment in our history. For the ancient Greeks, memory was a goddess. Talks about somebody else being the mother of muses. To Augustine, it was a vast and infinite profundity, a reflection of the power of God in man. That was kind of a neat phrase because as I'm reading this entire book, you almost have to wonder, you marvel at God's creation of the brain. How it adapts and how it stretches and how it adapts to different things that is thrown at it, and just especially when we get next into this next chapter, what it does to take things from short term to long term, and how many things he talks about the brain having an inexhaustible memory space that you can't fill up the brain. And that's to God's credit. God made us that way. And he never gets to that point in the book. He doesn't touch on that. But that's one of my biggest takeaways, that God has created just an incredible thing in us. We're wonders of his creation.
Absolutely. I enjoyed the section where he digressed a little bit and told about his experience, Martin, of writing the book. And basically, he moved off to a mountainside and turned everything off in order to get focused enough to write the book. He describes, disconnecting from all the digital services of his life. And,
right.
And that he kind of experienced a withdrawal. I can imagine that would be true, that, if you're so used to checking your email so many times a day or whatever it may be, that you would feel an absence in that case. But then he talked about the fact that over time, those cravings for that digital connection subsided, and his brain was able to relax. And, you know, just coming off of a week of vacation and enjoying time with my mom down in Mississippi, I can see the difference as I hit it hard, you know, going back to work and getting re-engaged and all the projects and things right. going on my computer or whatever. You do have, you know, a bit of a boost to be away, but you also immediately your brain is kind of in a different mode. So, yep. so I'm...
Yeah, absolutely. Jesus was a big fan of rest. You know, he commands it, and he did it. You know, on you know the eve before he was arrested, he went to a quiet place, you know, by himself, and that was a big point in this chapter as well. That you need that restfulness, that time away from the hustle and bustle. He kind of refers back to that Sleepy Hollow story that we talked about, or he talked about in one of the first chapters, where you know somebody just had nature around and didn't have all the stuff that goes along with urban living, and how that prepares you to think better, and how it even says, I think the quote is, when our he kind of equates it to getting enough sleep. So he says, when our sleep suffers, studies show so too does our memory. So the ability to have that quiet, uninterrupted time makes a big difference in it. Yeah, I guess I could prove that out too, because those all-nighters that you do in college for, you know, studying for exams, mm-hmm. How quickly that content was forgotten, and maybe you didn't perform as well as maybe you could, and getting a full night's sleep, you know, is just the way God put us together. So
right. And then he takes that analogy and he applies it to the fact that the internet doesn't ever give us a break.
Right.
We're just kind of constantly bombarded by information as we surf the web. And so there's no time for that restful, relaxed recharge. Approach to yeah. thing, because we're just constantly getting more, more, more. So, to his credit, he does bring up the other side of things. He talks about people that say, you know, our brains are going to adapt, and we're going to find the happy medium, and we're going to be able to take in all the information, but also, draw deeper conclusions and things like that. And I think that was maybe, it kind of reminded me of something that you said along the way in some of our discussions, that we will be able to grasp the right way to deal with all of this information.
Right. You know, the internet is an extension of our brains. It's not a replacement for, mm-hmm. you know, it's a tool that the brain can use to, and that's kind of how I view some of our Wells Tech stuff, that there isn't a reason to have all that stuff in my head, because it is there and I can refer to it and refer other people to it. And I think that's why we do it. And I think that's key. One of the other things that struck me, and this is more common sense than anything else, but when you really think about it, it makes a lot of sense. You talked about memory consolidation, getting short-term into long-term, getting connecting all the dots. And, you know, two things struck me. Really, mind maps are great at that, where they kind of give you a contextual view and they give you little memory pegs. That's why I like them a lot, where you can draw lines and insert pictures and arrows and whatever, and that just helps your memory. But he also said the key to memory consolidation is attentiveness, paying attention, you know, so that focus is really critical. And like I say, that's common sense, but if you really want to get something in your head, you have to be attentive. You have to be focused on it. You have to want to get it in there, versus kind of the distracted nature that, you know, the world is. You gotta put all that other stuff away. You gotta turn the automatic, you know, notifications in your Outlook or your email off, so that you're not notified every time an email comes in, or constantly have email open, or Facebook or Twitter or those kinds of things. You just have to kind of be focused on what you're doing, and your brain will grab onto it, obviously, a lot more quickly and more long term.
You know, that's a great concept. And as I reflected on the end of the book and the whole discussion we've had, one thing that I kind of came away with was give yourself time for deep thinking, and and teachers especially help your students learn those skills? And how do you do that? You allow them to be focused. Yeah. So give them, you know, read aloud time and things like that where there aren't any other distractions, where they learn those focusing skills. And I remember Dave Test telling us exactly that in the presentation I saw by him on this, you know, focus. Right. And do the deep thinking and nurture those things so that those areas of your brain develop as well.
Yep. One last thing. I don't know if you have other things, Sally, that you wanted to bring up, but one last thing that kind of struck me, and I'll quote him, the influx of competing messages that we receive whenever we go online not only overloads our working memory, it makes it much harder for our frontal lobes to concentrate our attention on any one thing. The process of memory consolidation can't even get started. He talks a lot about the hippocampus, you know, that part of your brain that actually connects the dots, takes short-term and makes it long-term. And remember the conversation about the taxi driver learning the routes, and if you had a GPS, then that part of the brain wouldn't develop. One thing that struck me is that there are actually tools that we can use to really focus our attention on stuff on the internet. You know, there's things for offline reading. You can tag things. You can put it in DIGO. You can strip out all the stuff around and just look at an article, more long form. And there's all kinds of Chrome plugins and things like that. That a lot. Pocket is one that I use. And there's Reader, I think it's called, where you can see. And even Evernote has something that where you can just click on an article and it'll just strip everything else away, even the ads, and just let you focus on that article. So those are probably good tools to consider if you're serious about using the web and trying to mine the content in a meaningful way versus this hyper, connected experience that he's talked about throughout the book.
So here's my challenge then, is how do we as a church move forward in this day and age when the majority of people aren't thinking about these effects on their brain? They're being changed. Our culture is changing. As he said, things are changing. What effect is that going to have on outreach efforts, for instance?
Great question. I don't have the answers. One thing that strikes me when you were asking the question is the sharing of the gospel is still much an oral thing. It's a verbal thing. It's a person-to-person thing. So regardless of how hyper-connected and how distracting the internet can be, the sharing of God's word is still going to happen person to person. God had obviously given us the tools to do that, the ability to relate to other people, to build relationships, and sometimes that can happen through the internet. But at the end of the day, sharing what is so important to us is really going to happen person to person.
Good answer. Positive answer. Good way to end the conversation.
Yeah. So I guess the book wasn't a total loss from my perspective. I think it made you think, and it's actually changed the way you do some things, I know. Mm-hmm. And I think it has some meaning for the way we use these tools, and just to make sure that we're using them in the right way and not just saying, well, we'll go all in because this is cool stuff. And because we can. And I think over time, like he said, and like we've said here in the discussion, we're working it out. And it's still pretty new, and we're still trying to figure it out. So, good stuff, Sally. So we can put this one to bed. I have no idea what the next book is. You have the next book?
Nope, I just have The Shallows. I'm saying goodbye to it.
Okay. I'm going to kiss that one goodbye.
No more shallow thinking for me.
Yeah. Okay. All right, let's move on to our tips of the week. And my tip, I'm just going to do a quick screen share for those of you following along at home. If I can get the right screen up, you should be seeing actually a shot of a Windows desktop. And my tip of the week is both for Windows 7 and Windows 8, but particularly Windows 8, there is a very integrated search tool now with with Windows that I think is actually not only very cool but very useful. And I've talked about the Windows key in the past. You know, that's kind of the key to a lot of the things in the Windows operating system now. But when you hit that Windows key, and I'll do that now, it brings up the desktop. This is Windows 8. But at this point, you can start typing a search term, or you can type an application, and it'll come up. So if you want to do a web search, or if you want to search your computer, it's the same thing. So you hit that Windows key, and you start typing. So if I were looking for something in a document or something on the web, let's say I would search for Martin Luther. So I'll just start typing Martin Luther. And the search term comes up. If I just hit enter, it's going to open up kind of a cool screen that shows a number of things. It's going to show all the documents that I have that has the word, the term Martin Luther in it. Comes up with Martin Luther College, of course. There's apparently 71 documents that I have. The newest ones or maybe the most relevant ones are going to come up at the top. But then beside it, you have all kinds of search results, provided Bing, of course, is Microsoft's search engine. So Wikipedia articles, a biography, images that are available on the Internet, movie reviews, the Luther movie is there, biographies. As you scroll through here, all very relevant results. A whole series of videos, related searches, and you can kind of keep going here and kind of a nice graphical display as you scroll through it, all kinds of relevant articles here. And I really didn't have to leave my desktop, so I just hit the Windows key and used my search term. It will work the same on Windows 7, but it will first search your local files. There is an Internet button that you have to press to get the Internet results to come up. But you also get, you know, good results right from the desktop as well with that. So very cool and very easy. So Windows key, and just start typing, and I think you will be actually surprised at the results you'll get now, how nice an experience it is.
Excellent.
All right, Sally, you are up.
My turn. I'm going to climb up on a soapbox. Because one of my biggest pet peeves is getting large attachments via email, especially if the attachments are sent to multiple people. So I'm going to encourage you all today with my tip of the week is to share files, don't email them. And by that I mean if you have any files you want to share, post them somewhere online and send someone a link to them instead of actually attaching them to email. If they need to download them, they can from your link, but most of the time people just want to look at things. So if you're working on a committee for church or whatever it may be, make use of Google Drive or Dropbox or similar tools. I've even seen people sharing files in Facebook groups. There's a file upload capability in Facebook groups. So if you want something to sit out there where people can have access to it for over time or whatever, use the file upload in Facebook groups. Just find some way to post your files online and then send links to them. You most of the time can control the security associated with the file, so you could make it very specific to just one or two people if you want them to have access. And as a bonus, I think I would recommend making things PDF format. For the most part, it's a lot easier than sending document or some word processing file. If you PDF it, everybody typically can view PDF format. And it also kind of locks the file up and keeps it from being editable if you want people to just view the file. If you're sharing things on your website, definitely PDF is a great format for that. So, again, it's kind of a pet peeve of mine, but I think something that we all could improve upon. So just kind of think twice, be a good digital citizen, and share, don't email.
Especially with a lot of the larger files that are being generated, PowerPoints and, you know, even some PDFs can get pretty big. Another reason to do that is that you can change the document and have that updated for the person that's receiving that email versus that one-time attachment that you sent out. And let's say there was an edit you wanted to make on the document, you'd have to send it again. as opposed to just editing the one document that everybody can view. So you're kind of reading my mind, Sally, because that's my pick of the week this week relates to that tip. So
Should just go ahead and share that, Martin. Be a perfect follow-up.
Okay, you had a nice lead-in. My pick of the week is Microsoft has been in the news lately with a lot of different things. One of them is they've renamed their SkyDrive cloud storage solution to OneDrive. And if I can share screen here. OneDrive, this is my personal OneDrive. But OneDrive is like Google Drive or Dropbox, and you have the ability to store content. And you have quite a bit of storage that they give right out of the box. They give you 7 gigs, but there's a lot of ways to increase or up that storage. It's very easy to store, to upload. You can sync, so you can have a copy on your local machine that syncs with the cloud storage. One nice thing about OneDrive is they've kind of married it to all the other online apps. So if you have a Microsoft account, you get OneDrive along with that, whether you know it or not, and you get all of the other apps that come along with a Microsoft account, including Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote, in addition to email, Outlook, and contacts and calendar function. So these all work pretty seamlessly with OneDrive, so you can create a Word document, Excel document. These are the online versions. These are not the desktop versions. But for many word processing or spreadsheet or presentation functions, these are just exactly what you need. And then they store it right on your OneDrive. Just kind of a nice new fresh coat of paint that Microsoft has given to these applications, and they work extremely well. They're snappy and they're all integrated, and everything gets saved into this one location. So I've taken to storing my all my documents here that are personal documents, because we use something very similar for the Synod, but for my personal documents, they're all stored here, and I get to work in very comfortable tools like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and I use OneNote as well. So just kind of a nice collection of tools that they've provided here that I think for most purposes and for most people will work well. It's platform agnostic too. So what I was showing you there was on a Mac in Chrome, but it'll work on Safari. So it really doesn't matter what you're using. You can share it, as I mentioned, and you can embed documents as well. So if you have a PowerPoint or a spreadsheet or a Word doc that you want to embed on a website, you can do that with an embed code, as well as mobile apps. So on whatever platform, whether you're Windows Phone, Android, or iOS, there are OneDrive apps where you can open up your documents right on your phone. So one other quick freebie I'll give you here is a kind of a great comparison. I should have brought this up earlier. Let me see if I can share this.
Comparison, that's just what I was going to ask you. How does it compare to Google Drive and Google Apps?
Great. Good that you asked.
Sounds like it's very... very parallel.
It does. So there's a great article on CNET that actually was just published this last month where it compares OneDrive and Dropbox and Google Drive and Box.net. And it side by side gives you all the nitty gritty from file size restrictions, the amount of free storage you get, can you earn extra free storage, how much it costs for extra storage, what operating systems are supported, and then kind of gives a blow-by-blow. It gives a narrative of each one, the good and the bad, where it excels, and they have a little section which is kind of interesting, where it falls flat. And if you're trying to consider, you know, what cloud storage you want to use, this would be something that, this would be an article that you'd probably want to read. So we'll put that in the show notes.
I can have room in my cloud for Google and Microsoft, I think.
And I do, because we do use Google for some of the things we do here on the show as well. But
that's right.
Very good. So, Sally, I hijacked your normal spot.
You did.
I'm sure it was worth the wait for our listeners, though. So what is your pick?
My pick of the week is called Color Schemer. I looked back in Wells Tech history and found that I picked this back in 2009, and I figured it was worth a rerun. Color Schemer Online is a way to develop color schemes around a particular color. So you start with your base color. It's shown over here in the left column, and then it gives you a collection of colors that go along with that. And you can switch to any of those colors as your base color and get a whole scheme around a new color. You also have buttons down here where you can lighten the color scheme. So if you're going for something lighter based on a particular color, or you can darken it if you want to go darker. Cool. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. It also gives you the RGB values as well as the hexadecimal values for all of the colors that are part of the color scheme. So for webmasters, that's like a gold mine because you really need those hex values. And it is such a pain to bring up the calculator and convert RGB to hex. So it's all right here for you. There's a button that says set hex, which basically you can put in any hex value. You don't have to find the color, you know, among the color schemes here. You can actually type in any hexadecimal value or any RGB value and click the set button, and it'll switch to that color and then give you the whole gamut of complementary colors to go along with that. So really great if you're trying to set up a web page, perhaps you even on final websites, you have some flexibility with your color palettes and things, and you want to pick good colors that go along maybe with your church or school logo or whatever it may be. So Color Schemer Online, and we'll have the link in the show notes.
So I recall that's one of those tools that we recommend to our final web trainees, and maybe that's why you stumbled on it again as we're doing some prep for some more final web training. But cool pick and useful. There are many uses for that, not just if you are a webmaster. So great.
Very good.
And that will conclude our picks of the week.
Martin gave me that great lead-in for our community feedback segment. So I'm back and again just doing the solo thing today. Martin's at a conference. We pre-recorded that segment that you already watched. And now I just want to follow up with some of the great community feedback shared by Wells Tech listeners. So let me do a quick screen share, and I'll show you a few interesting websites today. Starting with Yellow Dino, which is apparently a kind of a digital citizenship child protection program, but it has kind of a scriptural basis. This was shared by Randy Nepson via our Digo library, and looks like it's specifically geared toward Christian schools. So I'm not sure of the doctrinal content, you know, if it's been fully vetted or is something, you know, that we would stand behind or whatever. I think it would certainly be worth a look because it's obviously coming from a Christian standpoint. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes. Next up, Jason Schmidt shared a link to Clipart, etc., and specifically to their page of Currency Clipart. So if you're looking for Clipart that has drawings of currency, all different types of drawings, stacked up currency, you know, front and back images of different coins, that kind of thing. They have 398 illustrations of U.S. currency available. And I took a look at the licensing, and this is available for free for educational purposes. You can download up to 50 images for educational use. So check out the link again in the show notes. Also from Jason, a website that's a background image generator. Maybe you just want something generic for a website that you're putting together. On this site, you can pick colors, and different settings are available where you can change things about the type of design that shows. And when you're happy with it, you can download a PNG image of the background, kind of generic background that you can tile on a website. So again, this is background image generator. We also heard from Gail Potratz, who is one of our semi-regular classroom technology correspondents, and Gail actually was on the show, I think it was now 2 weeks ago, and her pick of the week was an iPad app called Doceri, which is kind of a whiteboarding app and can make recordings and things. So students could use it to demonstrate things using their iPad, for instance. Well, Gail wrote to us and told us she felt like she just scratched the surface of all the things that Doceri can do, and she recommended that we check out this overview video available on YouTube to learn more about what you can do with Doceri in the classroom. From our friend Ryan Rosenthal, who teaches at Faith in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, a link to Cosmos for Kids website, which is all about the solar system. So you can learn about stars and systems and galaxies and the entire universe. And it does have advertising on the site, but it seems to be pretty minimal and very well put together. So if you are teaching solar system, this may be one to add to your list of sites for your students to explore. From Tom Rosenau on Google+, I picked up on a Slate article called PowerPointless: Digital Slideshows Are the Scourge of Higher Education. And this is specifically targeted toward college professors just kind of using rote slideshows and reading it to their students word for word, point by point, you know, having too many words on the slide and things like that. And I thought it was certainly appropriate, not just for college, but some good reminders to any of us who use or who do presentations with PowerPoint or any of the other presentation type software that's out there, that the point of the presentation isn't to convey every single word that you want to say during your presentation. And it's not necessary that the presentation be able to stand alone and present all the concepts without you. In other words, word for word, your speech or whatever. But that the presentation supplement what you're saying and drive home your points. And I think that they do a very good job, you know, demonstrating that issue by the different slides that are part of this presentation. So check it out. And our last piece of feedback I wanted to share today was a website called Opia, I guess. I'm not known for my pronunciation skills, so forgive me if I'm pronouncing it wrong. This was sent to me by Pastor Rob Gunther up in Kenai, Alaska, and it is a new site. I understand Google is behind this somehow, and it's for education or learning journeys, little small snippets. It's kind of breaks things down. So if you're able to answer questions, you can solve them right away, or you can try it on a smaller scale. So if you choose to go that route, then it'll break down the question and give you some things to think about and smaller scale demonstrations of the things. I haven't dug too deeply, so if anybody's using the site or knows of education uses for the site, we'd love to hear more about it and share that with our Wells Tech audience. And you too can contribute to Wells Tech. If you visit wellstech.wells.net, you'll see all the different ways to contribute with the social media links along the top and the send a voicemail link in the right sidebar. So let us hear from you via Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Digo, Pinterest, our Wells Tech Wiki or our Wells Tech Listserv. All of those are great ways to contact us. You can also leave a comment right here on the show notes page or send us an email at wellstech@wells.net. So visit our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, for all of those links. And that's going to about do it for Sally Seizing the Day. I am happy to be with you, but I will be even more happy when my fearless leader is back and joining me live on Wells Tech next week, when we will be talking about live streaming technology. So those of you that are interested in doing live streaming, perhaps bringing your worship service to the web as a live broadcast, you'll want to tune in for this. We are excited to have Professor Steve Zambo, who teaches at Wisconsin Lutheran College and is also behind Salty Earth Pictures, and he's going to join us just with some video kind of best practices, things that will enhance your video production greatly. So looking forward to next week and sharing a lot of good information with you about live streaming technology. To close out today's show, you'll want to visit our show notes page again at wellstech.wells.net to grab a free audio download from Wells Musicians' Cross to Glory. And this week's free audio is My Grace Will Do. So you can put that on your MP3 player, download it to your computer, and it's yours to keep as a free gift from Cross to Glory and from the Wells Tech Podcast. We'd love to have you join us again next week on Wells Tech. We'll be doing it Tuesday the 18th at 4 p.m. Central Time. So tune in live, and until then, may God bless your week. Thanks for watching.